Let's talk now about what the plane crash means for the crisis in Ukraine. President Obama today said Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 was shot down by a surface-to-air missile fired from territory held by pro-Russian rebels in eastern Ukraine. And he called for a credible investigation into the downing of the plane and an immediate ceasefire in Ukraine. Ukraine's Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk said all red lines have been crossed.
We ask all respective governments to participate in this investigation and to support the Ukrainian government to bring to justice all these bastards who committed this international crime.
Well, meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin called for a ceasefire in eastern Ukraine as well. I spoke earlier with Stephen Pfeiffer, a former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine who's now with the Brookings Institution in Washington, and I asked him what he thinks happened to the plane.
Well, first of all, there needs to be a full investigation, and you know, we still have to get the facts. But I think the initial indications are that the separatist shot the airliner down, probably in error. And the most damning piece of evidence is Igor Strelkov, who's a Russian citizen who's been in eastern Ukraine heading separatist forces now for about 3 months. He put on a website yesterday at about the time of the shootdown, his forces had shot down an AN-26. That's a military transport plane used by the Ukrainian Air Force, but right time and about the same place where the Malaysian air shootdown was reported. So I think that was fairly indicative. And then the Ukrainian security services later put out tapes that they said of separatists communicating. The first one says, we've shot down an airplane. They're talking about what kind of plane it is. And one guy says, well, I'm going to go to the site and check it out. And then a subsequent conversation, he's saying, there's no military stuff here. It's a civilian plane. I've seen a Malaysian Air logo. So the evidence seems to suggest it was a mistake, but that the separatists were the ones who fired the missile.
And if that is the case, what does the international response need to be? And let's start with the response from the United States.
Well, I think the next question is, if it is confirmed that the separatists shot the plane down, and there is evidence, again, including on Mr. Strelkov's website, that they had a surface-to-air missile with the capability to reach up to the altitude that the airliner was flying at. I think the next question is going to be then, where did they get it? Now, the Ukrainian military has it, so one possibility is the separatists could have taken it from the Ukrainian military. But I think most analysts would say, no, it was more likely to have come over the border from Russia. There's been a significant flow of weapons, including tanks, artillery, and missiles from Russia into Ukraine over the last several weeks, reported by the U.S. government, reported by NATO, and also documented by lots of Ukrainians with their video cameras in eastern Ukraine.
But what does the U.S. need to do if it is found that the separatists were responsible for this?
Well, I think, again, the ability to influence the separatists from the United States or Europe is going to be difficult. What it will call for, though, is renewed pressure on Russia to end the flow of weapons. I mean, to the extent, if it turns out that the separatists shot this down and the missile came from Russia, the Russians bear a share of the responsibility for this. They need to be ending that flow of weapons, and they need to be using their influence, and they have significant influence with some of the separatists to push them to stop the fighting, get a real ceasefire going, and engage in a political settlement. That's the only real way forward here.
Hillary Clinton was asked about this and what she thought about it in an interview with Charlie Rose, and here's what she had to say.
If there is evidence linking Russia to this, that should inspire the Europeans to do much more on three counts. One, toughen their own sanctions, make it very clear there has to be a price to pay. Number two, immediately accelerate efforts and announce they are doing so to find alternatives to Gazprom. You know, Russia has not diversified its economy. It is still largely dependent upon natural resources, principally gas and oil. And thirdly, do more in concert with us to support the Ukrainians.
Do you see, Stephen Pfeiffer, the European leaders and particularly countries like Germany and France being more forceful with Russia, given their economic interests in having a close relationship with Russia?
Well, thus far, because primarily of those economic interests, the Europeans have been more reluctant to apply robust sanctions on Russia than the U.S. government has. And in part, that reflects the fact that the European Union has to come to consensus among 28 states. But my guess is that this event yesterday, this tragedy with the shoot down of the Malaysian airliner, is going to have an impact in Europe. And the one good thing that could come out of that tragedy would be if there would be more pressure again on Russia to get the Russians to use their influence to end the fighting and seek a peaceful settlement.
What about sanctions? Have these sanctions been working at all, do you think, against Russia?
Yeah, the sanctions have had an economic impact. There's no question about that. For example, Bloomberg reported about 5 weeks ago that Russian companies were able to place about $43 billion in foreign currency bonds last year. And in January and February, they'd placed about $6 billion. From March up until 5 weeks ago, the amount had been zero. So I think that's a reflection of the sanctions. But the sanctions have not yet achieved their primary political goal, which is to get Moscow to move from being part of the problem to being part of the solution. And that's where I think the hope is that more robust sanctions will succeed where the sanctions to date have not achieved their political purpose.
Now, you are a former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. If you were the current U.S. ambassador to Ukraine right now and you were right in the thick of the diplomacy over this, what's the way out of this conflict between Russia and Ukraine, really, but now bringing in a lot of big powers around the world?
Well, actually, I think the pieces of a solution are there. Mr. Poroshenko, the president of Ukraine, has said he's prepared to do some decentralization of power, push authority out to the regions. He said that he's prepared to grant official status to Russian language. He's called for early parliamentary elections. These things, I think, are all of interest to a large portion of the population in eastern Ukraine, and they're the sorts of things that I think they are interested in politically. In terms of international relations, Mr. Poroshenko has ruled out any push to join NATO. And I think there are two reasons for that. First of all, it would be hugely controversial within Ukraine. He does not need any more division within his country. But second, I think he understands that there's no appetite in NATO for bringing Ukraine closer or putting Ukraine on a course towards membership. So NATO is off the table for now. On the European Union question, that may be a problem with the Russians, but the Europeans and the Ukrainians have said, let's have a three-way conversation, and then perhaps in September, to talk about how we can make sure that Ukraine's joining the association agreement with the European Union will not have a negative impact on Ukrainian-Russian relations. So there are enough pieces there where if, and I think, again, the key question here is the Kremlin, if the Kremlin wanted to push towards a settlement, you could see a settlement emerging, perhaps deferring the issue of Crimea, but you can see a settlement emerging where all sides could walk away and say, we got to win.
Stephen Pfeiffer is a former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine and director of the Brookings Institution's Arms Control Initiative. Stephen Pfeiffer, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And a quick check on some other news we're following today. Up to 100 homes have been lost in a wildfire in Washington state. So far, no injuries have been reported, though, and the cause is under investigation. Also, a federal appeals court in Denver ruled today that a ban on same-sex marriage in Oklahoma violates the U.S. Constitution. Last month, the same court overturned a ban in Utah. Gay marriage in both states, though, is on hold until appeals are resolved.